which are documents or petitions in another case, which is not part of the transcript in this case. He has voluntarily attached those documents to his papers before the court. I think he's got, one is a,
it's all right. If it's not in the record, it's not in the record.
Oh, okay.
We called our attention to the fact that you think it's not in the record.
Yes.
We hear from the other side.
All right. Thank you.
I remember one time in a situation like this came up, Chief Justice Cavett said your motion was overruled, and the lawyer standing where you are said, note our exception.
If it pleases the court, a brief look at the facts. The relator was divorced from Mr. Pacheco in March of 1975. At some subsequent date, Mr. Pacheco went to Tennessee and took this child from Ms. Marshall, formerly Pacheco. Ms. Marshall, by the divorce decree of 75, was giving managing conservatorship of that child, and to my knowledge, and the record does not reflect that there has been any change of managing conservator from my client or related to anyone else. That child had been taken from Tennessee without the consent of relator. The child was brought to Cleburne, Texas in February 22nd, I believe. And Mr. Pacheco filed a modification suit in Johnson County with the 18th District Court on, I believe it was the 24th. On the 27th of February, a few days after that, I was employed and did file an application for writ of habeas corpus with the 18th District Court. Now, when Mr. Pacheco filed his modification suit on the 24th, 2 days after he snatched the child from Tennessee, there was a temporary restraining order, which is not in the record, in the transcript. However, opposing counsel attempted to put that in his reply, and I had not received a copy of that, but I had included that exhibit in my reply to his argument. And that is Exhibit A of Relator's Reply to Respondent's Argument, in which there is a temporary restraining order restraining relator from trying to take possession of Mr. Pacheco, who filed that modification suit. On March 6th, the application for writ of habeas corpus was heard by presiding judge Wilson, and said application was denied. The basis for said denial is...
Counsel,
sir?
We're talking about a lot of things which you say are not in the record. This is a mandamus.
Yes, sir.
Did either of you doubt the validity or question the validity of any of these instruments?
Yes. No, I don't.
I mean, is it a problem of proper authentication?
No, there's a problem of it being in the transcript, because I did not prepare for something that was not in the transcript, if that's what the court is alluding to.
Well, in habeas corpus and mandamus, sometimes you don't go through the formalities of preparing a transcript as you do in ordinary case and have it certified and all.
Yes,
that
sir. Well, I was just going by what the transcript certified to and what was included in the transcript. And what was included in the transcript, to my best of my knowledge, was the application for a writ of habeas corpus. Attached thereto was a certified copy of the divorce decree in 75 and the judge's order of March 6th denying the application for a writ, as best as I could recall. Now, the situation is this, that the application was denied, and contrary to Section 1410 of the Texas Family Code, it appears that the court went into everything that might have been in some other cases in arriving at his judgment of denying the application for writ of habeas corpus. The transcript, the statement of facts, is over my continuous objections. They were alluding to visitation rights. They were alluding to child support. Everything else was brought into it that would have properly, should have been brought in a modification suit and not in a writ of habeas corpus suit, and to which I've continually objected and, of course, got a standing objection by the court. Now, the court didn't find any abuse of the child or for any reason not to deny the writ of habeas corpus. The court says, trial court says, that it is basing its decision on a valid order. Now, this court, I'm sure, is familiar with section 1410, in that substantively it says that if there is a valid present order giving the custody of the child to one of the parties, then the court in a writ of habeas corpus hearing must give the child back to whoever has legal custody by virtue of a valid order. We maintain that the valid order was the divorce decree of 75. Okay. Now, the trial court, because in another cause of action, it was 4875B, which is the modification suit that the father brought. Our cause of action was 4875C, two different causes of action. I pointed out to the trial court that that modification suit must be in abeyance until this court decides the issue on habeas corpus only. The trial court, because it thought that a temporary restraining order that was issued on February 24th was a valid and subsisting order. The court says that on page, I think it's on page 92 or 93 of the statement of facts. And I specifically asked the court, it's in the transcript, I think it's on page 94 of the statement of facts, I specifically asked the court, could you please make a finding of fact as to whether or not there is a serious question concerning the welfare of the child? Section 1410, as this court I'm sure knows, that only in those instances where there is a serious question concerning the welfare of the child, may the child not be given back to the legal possessor of the child by virtue of a quarter. Now, the court, and I'm sure it's non-intentional, the court is an unintentional thing and it's kind of confusing. The court says two things to which he bases his judgment on. Number one, he says that there was a valid order in existence at the time, which is a temporary restraining order, which is the very thing that the legislator attempted to obliterate in these kind of custody battles between father and mother and the child. And the court says, based on that temporary restraining order that the court issued ex parte, my client had never been served any papers. There was never a hearing on any temporary managing conservatorship. But he says, based on that fact, it's on page 92, 93, or 94 of the statement of facts, therefore, that is a valid order, to which, of course, we accept, because section 1410 says that in a writ of habeas corpus hearing matter, that the trial court shall not consider the court shall disregard any cross action or motion pending for modification of the decree. Well, a temporary restraining order is part of an order of modification. You can't separate a part from the whole. Further, the court says also on page 92 or 93 of the statement of fact that he does not find any recent abuse of the child. However, there may be in the future. But there is nothing in the record, nothing in the testimony, to even give the court, to substantiate any opinion of the court in that regard. And I said to the court specifically, will the court please make a finding of fact as to what, if any, serious question there might be concerning the child? And the court says, I already did. Well, if the trial court says, I do not find any recent abuse of the child, but there may be some in the future without having any facts substantiating such a future opinion, I say the court, intentionally or not, abuses discretion in disregarding 1410. Up until this day, there has not been any change in managing conservatorship. I quote again from page 92 in the Statement of Facts. The court says, from the testimony I heard today, there is a serious question as to the immediate necessity concerning the child and the welfare thereof. And he goes on to say, I am not saying there has been an abuse of the child in the recent past, but there may be in the future. He's conjecturing and has no facts upon which to base that conjecture. I asked the trial court to specifically make a finding of the record as to what that serious question is, and the court replied, I thought I did.
Counsel, on February 25th, 1981, Judge Crozier signed a temporary restraining order.
Yes, sir.
Putting the custody in the father.
No, sir.
Temporarily.
No, sir.
And restraining the mother from interfering with it. Or?
There's a difference, if it please your honor.
Well, at any rate, Judge Wilson said it was
It was a restraining order only. You shall not take. He didn't say he's got the child. He said you shall not take the child from until we have a hearing.
I'm going to ask you a friendly question.
Yes,
a minute,
sir.
If you'll wait.
Yes, sir.
That order would have expired in 10 days, according to the statute.
That's correct.
All right. Now, it's been a lot longer than 10 days now.
That's
correct. Has there ever been a hearing?
No, sir.
On that?
No, sir.
Well, is the order still in effect?
There is now
February 25th, 81 order?
Actually, there's just a temporary injunction against both parties, as of now.
It's been what?
There's a temporary injunction against both parties. The hearing...
Was there a hearing held and a temporary injunction?
No, sir.
Has your client ever received notice of a temporary restraining order or a temporary injunction?
Yes, sir. On the very day that this hearing on habeas corpus was heard, when it concluded, when she walked out of the courthouse, the deputy served her the papers. On March 6, 1981. So there was never a hearing on it.
Well, this temporary injunction, has it been continued each 10 days by order of the court?
Yes, sir. It's being continued each 10 days by order of the court.
Just an ex parte order?
Ex parte order.
And you say a temporary injunction is being continued each 10 days?
Yes, sir.
Or a restraining order.
Restraining order.
Well, now, is there an injunction or is there a restraining order?
Well, actually, it says injunction, but I think it's meant that to both parties not to disturb the status quo.
There's a restraining order enjoining the parties.
That's correct.
Okay.
Now, as I read section 1410, and it says, of course, the right to possession of a child if the right to possession of a child is presently governed by a court order, the court in a habeas corpus proceeding involving the possession shall compel return of the child to the relator if and only if the court finds that the relator is presently entitled to possession by virtue of the court order. We have that in this case by virtue of the divorce decree of 1975. The court shall disregard any cross-action or motion pending for modification of the decree determining managing conservatorship, etc., unless it finds that the previous order was granted by a court that did not have jurisdiction of the party, In this case, the court did have jurisdiction of the party, so that would not apply. The child has not been in related possession and control for at least 6 months immediately preceding. The child, the record shows the child has been in the relator's control and possession for 6 months. Actually, the child was only out of the hands of the relator for 5 or 6 days, whatever it might be, when the father brought the habeas corpus hearing. So, the court cannot disregard the pending actions for modification because there is a court that has jurisdiction of the parties, and also the child has been in the possession of the relator within the 6 months of filing the writ of habeas corpus. So that would not apply. Now we go on to Section C. The court may issue an appropriate temporary order if there is a serious immediate question concerning the welfare of the child. The record shows without question there is no serious immediate question concerning the child. This court has held in various cases that I think the case of Forbes versus Wetman, 598 second 231, this court held that that serious question has to be of such a magnitude that it would be almost immoral to leave the child with her later if her conduct was such as to physically or mentally endanger the child. For example, if the child was abused, violence, thrown out of a car, who knows what. I think the court meant in that case that type of conduct. In this case, there is absolutely no evidence of any violence, harassment, or whatever. And so I submit to this court that Section C would not apply. Section D and so forth is not applicable to this case. Therefore, based on the fact that the court denied the writ of application based on a modification suit now in existence, which is the very same thing that Section 1410 says, tells the court you cannot consider any existing pending matter in this writ of habeas corpus thing. In other words, Section 14 says if this relator is entitled to this child by virtue of a decree, which is of March 1975, then you shall. You are compelled to return the child to the relator. It does not anywhere in the record, the court will read the record, it does not say anywhere in the record that there is a serious or questioning abuse. The court says, the trial court says, that he says there is a serious question as to the immediate necessity concerning. Immediate necessity, but the court doesn't say immediate concerning the welfare of the child. So I don't know what necessity means, whether it meant child support or what. However, the court goes on to say later, in this between pages 92 and 94 in the statement of fact, that the court finds that there is no question that the child's circumstances is okay. He says on statement of facts, page 95, the court further says, I am assuming that her living conditions are satisfied for the child. Therefore, I am not going to require any investigation of her circumstances. I'll assume she has a good living condition, referring to the relator. So there's no question here, even as far as economics go, which certainly should not enter the picture on a writ about on a habeas corpus matter. Certainly, even as economics go, there is no question that the child is being well taken care of, whatever her needs might be. I think the question points out to this, as opposing counsel profusely says in his paper. He says there is a pending order giving custody to Mr. Pacheco. But that pending order is not an order of custody. All it is a restraining order. Opposing counsel is trying to translate a temporary restraining order into a matter of custody. But arguendo, even if it were true, I submit to the court that that also would not apply in this case where a writ of habeas corpus was filed, where a relator had the right to have a child by virtue of the court order of March 1975, she would still be entitled to, even if erroneously, in an ex parte matter, the trial court gave temporary possession to the father, you see, which they didn't do in this case. Well, it was just a plain old raw, temporary restraining order and nothing further.
Counsel?
Sir?
Is your client going to leave the state if she gets the child by the state?
No, sir. In my word, she's working in Cleburne.
Did the trial judge think that?
Yes, sir. He thought so, because they have pretty liberal visitation rights between them both. And this happened March 6th. She's still in Cleburne. She wanted to disappear, she could have disappeared.
I'm talking about after she gets the child, if she does. Would she leave?
No. For the reason why, if I may permit, there is a cross action for termination of the father's rights in this suit.
Well, counsel, as I understand, there is a modification suit that has been filed.
That's correct.
And what your position is, give the child back to the mother.
Pending the hearing.
Now I'm fixing to finish my sentence.
Sir.
And then have the modification hearing. And if in that modification hearing, the order is that the father gets the child, the father gets the child, the mother, she gets the child.
So be it, whatever.
Your position is, have the modification hearing after the habeas corpus has been disposed of.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's what's pending now.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Counsel, the argument from the Respondent.
May I please support Mr. Ferguson, who is an argument for Respondent?
It pleases the court, I'm Jim Ferguson from Cleburne, Texas. I represent Judge Floyd Wilson, his request, who is the respondent in this case. I likewise represented Mr. Pacheco in the writ of habeas corpus case. I'd like to point out to the court, and in answer to Justice's question about being in the state, if the court will refer to the decree of Judge Wilson, the...
I didn't quite hear you refer to what?
If the court would refer to the judgment of Judge Wilson in denying the writ of habeas corpus, I believe you'll take notice that in the visitation rights that were awarded to the mother, the realtor, that in fact it was in... her brother was charged with keeping her within the state. If we want to look at past actions, she's been gone for some 4 years, and it's in the record that for the last 3 years, the father, Mr. Pacheco, had no earthly idea where she was. She took the child with her. And also, in the, what our counsel referred to as exhibits that are attached, to which he attached, the father was requested, it's all, I think, in the record, by Mr. Marshall, the present husband of Mrs. Marshall, the mother, to come to Tennessee and get the child for the benefit of the child and the welfare of the child. Based upon that, Mr. Pacheco went to Tennessee, brought the child back, did file a modification, did have a temporary restraining order, which in effect is, in the terminology of it, may not be all that clear, but it does say that the mother is restrained from removing the child from the custody of the father under any circumstances. Thereafter, when the writ was filed, it brought out, and it's clear in the record, that this youngster at 8.5 years of age has been to 1 year of school, that she was not getting proper food, she had nothing to wear, they had no money and unemployed, that the child was sleeping on the floor. All of these are in the statement of facts that for the court to read. What I think the court meant, and I take except Mr. Landau when he said, "I find no matters immediately under 14C in relation to the child," was not toward the mother, but toward, "I see no reason to remove the child at this time from Mr. Pacheco." Mr. Landau had asked him under 14C to remove the child from Mr. Pacheco. The court found that he had not. He did find, and Judge Wilson found, that the February 25th, 1981 order, which has been extended to forever 10 days, and which Mr. Landau knows was passed from a hearing tomorrow at his request. The whole thing would have been decided tomorrow. And all of that, and then extending it, and it has been extended, it's up again tomorrow, another extension hopefully will be granted. But the main point is, and what I see, is that 14C was not as to the mother, because at that time the court, Judge Wilson, thought that the February the 25th order placed the child with the father and saw no reason for removing the child from the father. He did say he would like an investigation of the home. Mrs. Marshall at that time actually had no home to investigate. But I think the court, this court in, I believe it's Stanley versus Stewart, made very clear in one respect. You stated that you had, you recognize a broad discretion in a trial court that has to do with issuing orders relative to the minor children that are in the districts, and that you do not wish to usurp that unless you, I guess, feel that there is a broad misuse of a discretionary power by the trial court. I think, by all means, that when you overrule this in the beginning, you're right, this is a rehearing, that we're standing on one basis. We want the child in Texas. We want the child before the court, or available to the court, for a temporary hearing and later for a final hearing. This court knows as well as I, when a woman leaves the state and takes a child under a court order, like being managing conservator, under what theory can we actually go get that child back into Texas for a hearing?
What do you think, go kidnap them? Is that what you mean?
Talking about the mother? Yeah, I'm saying if she was rewarded, if this writ was granted, sir, and the mother was awarded custody of the child tomorrow, I feel she'd be gone the next day, just like Judge Wilson has intimated that he feels, or else he wouldn't have placed the brother or charged him with keeping her in Texas.
Well, do you feel that he was proper in taking the child from Tennessee back here?
Yes, sir, Your Honor, based upon how he did it, yes, sir.
Well, how did he do it?
He did it because the mother's husband called him and said, do it to save her. It's now he's talking about not being a partner. Mr. Landau stood there, and hopefully it's in the record, when we were offering these instruments, and I was offering to call the clerk, and he said it wasn't necessary that we could enter into all these orders on the change of custody such into the record. And he was standing there at the panel, so I'll bring in Mrs. Cook and we'll put all this before the court. Mr. Landau says it's not necessary. He says, I agree that they're there. I don't agree that they're right. I said, no. All I want them to be is in the record. I don't care about anything else.
Counselor?
Yes, sir.
What other than application for writ of habeas corpus has a relator in this case filed in the district court?
He filed, Your Honor.
What I'm talking about is jurisdiction of the court, because you cannot get service on her if she's in the state merely to answer a writ of habeas or file a writ of habeas corpus or a hearing on it. Is he in some other way submitted to the jurisdiction of the district court?
Yes, Your Honor. He has answered the, I can check my file quickly if you'd like me to. The modification, sir, he filed a contempt on the father. He's filed a motion to terminate the rights of the father.
Okay, well, that's answered my question.
At least three other things. It seems like, and I'm sorry, but it seems like there are four, but he has certainly submitted himself to jurisdiction.
Now, pursuing that just a little further.
Yes, sir.
You have filed on behalf of the father a modification suit.
Yes, sir.
And has service been obtained on her in that modification suit?
Yes, sir.
And of course, in the modification suit, all of these matters which relate to the condition and care of the child will be completely aired out.
Yes, sir. That's the hearing, sir, that would have been tomorrow.
And in the meantime, you have had the child, and the prior order of the court placing managing conservatorship in the mother has, during this interim, really been frustrating.
Yes, sir. What the court, what Judge Wilson did, Your Honor, he left the child with the father. And it recognized and so stated February 25th, 1981 order restraining her from removing the child from the father with remaining full force and fire.
All right, then from February until the middle of April, father has had the child and the mother has been enjoined from interfering
now,
with that situation.
Under that order of the habeas corpus, which was around the 6th day of March, I believe, Your Honor, the court awarded, the father had the child in school, and the court awarded the mother a week, and then the father a week, the mother a week and the father a week. The transfer is on a Sunday, but each party is taking the child to the school where the child is.
You mean that's the arrangement now?
Yes, Your Honor. But
then the mother has had custody, I mean,
as much as the father.
And she hasn't gone back to Tennessee with the child.
She left and went back to Tennessee for some period of time without the child.
And I don't want to practice law for you, but you might get an order, nay exeat, common law order, with a bond. The order can provide a bond, which can be forfeited in the event the child is taken out of the state or is not delivered back to the state.
Your Honor, we discussed that the time this order is entered before Judge Wilson on March the 6th. However, the Mr. Appleberry, the brother of Mrs. Marshall, came before the bench and assured the court that he would, during her week, be responsible to keep that child in the state of Texas and pending any further hearings.
There are ways to keep the child and the mother in the state.
Yes, sir. But he was before the court and did advise that's the reason we abandoned the bond. He said that he would see that she remained in the state at all time and be personally responsible for it during the time, the week that the mother had the child, which is the primary concern. We know that if the child gets out of Texas, that we'll have no further hearings in our feelings.
Well, you could proceed with your modification suit in the absence of the mother, couldn't you?
Yes, sir.
That's the best way to win a lawsuit.
I'd rather just be aired out all at one time, practicers, and let them both have their day in court. I think that's the easiest, even if we did obtain custody through a modification suit. Then we're going to end up, or my client would, in some other state, going through another proceedings. It seems to me, if she's out of the state, we can't just walk in someplace and get the child without going through whatever that state's legal proceedings are. But anyway, that's our contention on this. We feel that the order of the 25th is valid, and that's the order.
Is there a finding of emergency in there?
On the 25th, sir?
February. Yes. That's the one that Judge Wilson was upholding.
That's the one that I just mentioned all the things that the court found.
I'm saying you related a lot of facts, but is there a finding of emergency?
Well, the word emergency, it was not definitely used, but the court said extraordinary proceedings.
I didn't quite hear you.
The court used the word extraordinary proceedings, I believe I'm right, and found the affidavit of the father to contain enough for an emergency ruling. That's why I made it. I'm talking about Judge Crozier tonight, Your Honor, who later this talked about himself.
Counsel, where I'm going to is section C of Article 1410. Is there any finding of a court of immediate and irreparable harm or serious question concerning the welfare of the child other than the first paragraph of the temporary restraining order? I think this is the 25th of February.
Your Honor, you're speaking in connection with, and I presume you're speaking of the March 6th order?
I'm just asking if there is any finding. 1410 says you can disregard You can disregard previous orders if the court finds there is serious immediate question concerning the welfare of the child. That's
predicated, Your Honor, on the order February 25th, yes, sir.
Now, and that's a temporary restraining
order. Yes, sir.
Ex parte.
Yes, sir.
The lady was not present.
Right, sir.
And I take it has to be your position that it has the dignity of a valid order.
Yes, sir.
Even though it's entered in chambers without parties.
I think the court would have had to take extraordinary measures and found a considerable amount of emergency measures in order to have issued the order, yes, sir, and set it for a temporary hearing. That's really all I want to appreciate. Thank you for your time.
Rebuttal argument from the late court.
If it pleases the court, I'll just take a few moments to answer some of the matters. The statement of fact is replete with incidents of the father gambling.
Now, you're speaking of the statement of facts before Judge Wilson.
Yes, sir.
On the habeas corpus.
Yes, sir. The statement of fact is gambling, drinking.
A lot of us do a little of that, can't
we? Well, and drugs,
well,
and things like that.
On that.
But the gambling and the drinking is not an occasional thing that I like to do myself, but is more of a business nature. But getting back to some of these things is that when he was talking about visitations and things like that, that she had that he was denied visitation rights. The statement of fact says that, you know, he was not denied. He didn't make the contacts that he's supposed to make, etc. But even be that so, visitation rights and things of that nature have to do with modification suits, and I submit to the court, not habeas corpus matters, unless such visitation rights now would be of that mental effect on a child. But I don't think it comes within that sphere. He talks about Judge Wilson having the child, having the brother of the relator in his home. That is true. At that time she had just come into town and didn't have a regular place to live. And we volunteered that let the child stay with the mother at the brother's house. If she wanted to leave, she could have left at any time and pick up that child, brother or no. But she didn't. She's still there today. A cross action was filed to terminate the rights of the father based on some of these things in a statement of fact of booze and pimping and whoring and drugs and things of that nature. At the present time, apparently, Judge Wilson didn't think that there was of such a nature that there was any danger to the child, because Judge Wilson would not have let him have 1 week with the child and her have 1 week with the child. And so as of now, they each have alternate weeks, starting with Sunday, I believe, and ending on Saturday. So I don't think there's any question concerning the welfare of the child as far as the child being in relator's hands. Now, all this other stuff that he's talking about, the record speaks for itself. What I say, I may have colored a little bit, and what opposing counsel said, but I don't think we could have colored what is in the court reporter's notes. And I submit to this court that based on the 1410, that the trial court is compelled to return the child to relator. Now, we have told you that we are in the Texas jurisdiction. If my client disappears overnight, which she won't do because she's not paying me this kind of money, to file a cross action to terminate the right. But even if she does, this court has jurisdiction over the suit, and by default or otherwise certainly can give managing the servitorship to the child, to the father. But as it stands now, I submit to the court that, as it says in Lasker and Chrisman and this court says in the Strobel case, that unless there is an existing emergency of such a nature, the trial court is compelled and must, by Section 1410, return the child to relator.
Counsel, what's your position about the recitation in this order of the 25th that in his opinion he finds that there was an immediate and irreparable injury, loss, or damage will result to the safety and welfare of the child and of the movement unless respondent is restrained as requested?
Because, Your Honor, in practicing law, that is standard procedure to throw everything in, like the kitchen sink, into one of those things. That whatever you can put on. Now, if he finds it, that's an ex parte thing. If he finds that it's so, there is nobody to dispute it because relator is not served with papers to come into court and dispute those allegations. And certainly, we are in court and we have disputed among in the writ of habeas corpus hearing that there is any emergency, because there is no emergency, because in that particular writ of habeas corpus hearing that Mr. Pacheco, the movement in that modification suit, had every opportunity to show credible evidence, and there is no credible evidence in the record to justify and to sustain his temporary restraining order. I submit to the court that by Section 1410, the child should be turned back to the relator, and then let the trial court, with its modification suit, everybody have a hearing on that. But first things first. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted on written briefs and oral arguments for both parties. That concludes the oral submissions for the day. And the
record does not reflect what control, if any, they may have had over their wives' separate property interests in the city products problem. The Court of Civil Appeals correctly found, pursuant to the pronouncements of this court in the Schnitzer case and many cases which have come before you on application since that time, that when you have a stranger to the title to this property without any interest, that stranger, when he joins into an agreement in which he agrees to restrict competition, then you have a void contract under the Texas Antitrust Statutes, which are found in our Business and Commerce Code.
Did the husband not have an interest in the income?
The property, Your Honor, was owned. Their wives had a separate property interest they inherited from their father. There is no record which reflects what, if any, interest they might have had. The record merely says that they were married for 40 years, so I'm assuming that if there was income to these parties, and there's nothing in the record, that they would have an interest in that income. But again, I submit to the court that that's not the vendable interest or anything that would reflect the right for them to go out and bind themselves to restrict competition in violation of the antitrust statute. And I think it's now admitted on oral argument that this particular covenant is in violation of that act, unless it comes within some exception that this court has seen fit to outline in the Stitcher case. In other words, if the parties are as we say they are, then it's void. We're strictly down to a situation concerning the parties themselves as to whether or not we have an unlawful combination of people who got together to restrict competition. Yes, they do have a community property interest in community income and separate property. That's the law. I'm not denying that. But I am saying the record doesn't reflect what that interest was. And I'm also saying that is not sufficient interest under the law of this state to
sustain a position to allow them to go in and join an agreement to restrain.
Brother, what would be your position if this last amendment had been executed in 1961 instead of this?
It would not have changed one iota, Your Honor, because if you look at the instrument itself, there is nothing in that instrument that reflects that Mr. Sheridan and Mr. Single, that Mr. Siegel, signed it pro forma. In fact, to the contrary, if there's any sort of indication that there was a joinder, it was a joinder of their wives to their signature.
About what the situation was back there when at the inception of the incident.
So if it was denied under oath, it simply required that it be proved, and we submit to Your Honor that it was proved and that the trial judge found it to exist as a matter of law. Now, the fact that the lease was valid from its inception, there was no dispute about it. There was no attempt and no result in establishing any violation of the Antitrust Act or any combination or restraint of trade which would violate the Antitrust Act. The situation fit exactly within the opinion of this court in Smith. Then what was it that brought the problem about? If the husband, for example, were not landlord, then how were they bound by themselves in the first place? If they didn't own any property, if they weren't partners, if they owned no interest in any kind of property, and they owned no property in Colorado City, how could they be bound to the if they weren't in fact landlords? Because they had nothing to lease. They had nothing to say. Again, we submit to Your Honor that the viability and validity of the covenant and the lease remained inviolate throughout. There were no developments at this place which changed the situation from its inception as being a perfectly valid, legal, enforceable agreement, which was offered and given in return for a matter of consideration. Now, with respect to holding the ownership of the Colorado City Drugstore, that drugstore was not owned by the husband. If there's any inference here to the contrary, they didn't own the Colorado City Drugstore. Now, with respect to the severability approach,
who did own the drugstore?
The drugstore was again owned by Mr. Loeb and the Levy group of defendants. But again, the husband had no interest in that drugstore.
Their wives,
yes, sir. Other than whatever interest they would have had from such property in some other way. They own no title to it, and I think the inference perhaps is given that they own some other interest in that drugstore.
If they were owners here, then they were owners there.
Yes, sir.
And vice versa.
Yes, that is correct. That's on the same basis. Now, Professor Carvin, in addressing this matter of severability, makes, I think, a very pertinent observation, and this will be included, of course, in our supplemental brief, of course, in kind of Smith and Fowler. With respect to partial illegality, the real issue is whether partial enforcement is possible without injury to the public and without injustice to the parties themselves. It is believed that such enforcement is quite possible in the great majority of cases. To give an example, that if the owner of a business whose business and goodwill extends to or is limited to Trenton, New Jersey, for example, and if he promises not to open a competing business anywhere in the state of New Jersey, he says the restriction is much greater than his reason. This is good reason, says Professor Carvin, for refusing to enjoin the seller.
that wife in violation of that trespassing? And was that the intent that this court had in mind in the language it used in the picture case? Of a property interest in the lease premises.
What is Fortin Council, how much time do you wish for filing your submittal brief?
If we could have 10 days, that'd be sufficient.
How much time would you care? Would you like to have counsel file your reply? We'll be allotted that time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Case is submitted on written briefs and oral arguments.